Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as The New York Times, The News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day back in 1962 that the BBC banned which song? Was it A, Big Girls Don't Cry by the Four Seasons? B, Catch a Falling Star by Perry Como? C, Monster Mash by Bobby Boris Pickett? Or was it D, In the Ghetto by Elvis Presley? Banned by the BBC in 62. What was that song? And question number two, it was on this day back in 1985 that a 2.5-acre garden memorial was dedicated to John Lennon by his widow, Yoko Ono. The memorial in New York City's Central Park is called what? Is it A, Imagine Peace Park? Is it B, Octopus's Garden? Is it C, Strawberry Fields? Or is it D, Instant Karma? Name of John Lennon's memorial in Central Park? What's it called? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of October the 9th. Well, it was on this day back in 1813 that composer Giuseppe Verdi was born. He composed 26 operas, including Rigoletto, La Traviata, and Aida. 1813 today. And it was 45 years ago today, 1975, that Saturday Night Live was broadcast for the first time with George Carlin as the guest host. Janis Ian performed at 17, and Billy Preston played Nothing from Nothing. SNL's first broadcast, 1975, today.
Tells you when you're young that life is full of questions and there aren't that many answers.
Sheryl Crow's Flying Blind introduces our country music news. It's entitled Seven Podcasts for Music Lovers. This is published in the New York Times by Emma Durden on the 1st of October, 2020. These shows will keep you up to date on new releases, deepen your appreciation of your existing playlists, and help to broaden your musical horizons. No corner of culture has been untouched by the pandemic. With institutions shuttered, most movie and TV production in limbo, and most live performances indefinitely postponed. But music has weathered the storm better than many art forms, as artists turn to virtual concerts during lockdown, or produce records inspired directly by the quarantine, like Charlie XCX's How I'm Feeling Now and Taylor Swift's Folklore. These podcasts will keep you up to date on new releases, deepen your appreciation of your existing playlist, and help to broaden your musical horizons. Cocaine and Rhinestone, for example. This is the history of country music podcast. Country music may be a love-it-or-hate-it genre, but you don't need to be a diehard to appreciate the rich storytelling of this limited series podcast. In its 14-episode run, Cocaine and Rhinestones examines the complex, surprising history of country music through the 20th century. Tyler Mahan, Coe's enthusiasm for his subject shines through, but never deters him from asking tough questions about country music, which often means asking broader questions about America. One standout early episode tells the story of Loretta Lynn's 1975 song about birth control, The Pill, and exactly why it was banned from the radio, touching on the history of reproductive rights in the U.S. and the moral double standard that exists between men and women in country music. Starter episode, The Pill. Why was Loretta Lynn banned? Kira Tecane, performing O Mio Bambino Caro, introduces our classical music news. This is published in the San Francisco Examiner on the 1st of October, 2020, by Patty Niemi, entitled, Why Are the Great Opera Companies Silent? Leading a major opera company like the Metropolitan Opera, Lyric Opera of Chicago, or the San Francisco Opera is challenging during the best of times. And for an art form in the business of crowds, a global pandemic is not the best of times. This crisis is forcing opera companies to innovate. Some management teams are doing it well. Some aren't doing it. Yes, but I imagine the general directors of these companies replying, "What about safety?" When singers expel great clouds of air from their considerable lungs, it's easy to share more than just air. Last Sunday, Deutsche Oper Berlin began performing Die Walküre. They implemented frequent rapid turnaround testing for their cast and are performing live to a reduced socially distanced audience. Earlier in the summer, they performed a semi-staged adaptation of Rheingold on the roof of a parking deck. London's English National Opera is offering screenings of La Bohème at a drive-in movie theater. Their solutions are as untraditional as they are magical. Opera Europa has published shared, continuously updated guidelines as a resource for organizations to safely prepare the facilities. Yes, but those companies are in Europe. Europe's response to the pandemic was faster and more comprehensive. Atlanta Opera has put together a new health and safety advisory council, a team of epidemiologists, public health specialists, and doctors. Their Molly Blank Big Tent series will present 18 performances of Pagliacci in a custom-made tent without walls, allowing fresh air to move through the venue at all times. The tent will have capacity for up to 240 audience members with socially distanced seating and required masks. Moving Outdoors has been working for other companies, too. Washington National Opera has a pop-up opera truck which will drive their Kafritz Young Artist around the city on demand. The general director of Michigan Opera Theater, despite only joining the company in August 2020, has inaugurated his tenure with a chamber music reduction of Gotterdammerung, performed in a parking garage. Yes, but funding money for these innovations is difficult. Among the reinvented fall season offerings are Houston Grand Opera's Live from the Cullen Recital Series, which kicked off on September the 11th with a performance by international star soprano Tamara Wilson. The series is being underwritten by two longtime supporters who made an extraordinarily generous gift specifically for HGO Digital Programming. Steering a big ship is hard, and it takes big money, according to the New York Times. Despite the Mets furloughing their musicians without pay since March, they were able to pay $2.6 million to James Levine to settle a lawsuit. San Francisco Opera's endowment is worth approximately $250 million. If there was ever a time to release funds, a global pandemic is it. Coming back from the pandemic to a full endowment and an empty theater would be devastating. There is a great truth, one that we sense on a nightly basis. There is no art form more beautiful than opera. What other creation combines music, words, drama, and stagecraft? With our audience, we share stories of life, death, love, loss, passion, joy, anger, regret, and pain. Opera tends to be, as the chorus in Turandot sings, grave, enormous, and imposing. We want to collaborate. We, the musicians of these grand opera companies, have experience, passion, history, and ideas. It's heartbreaking that our managers are presiding over ghost lights. The leaders of these companies are focusing on the but. We musicians, as well as our opera-loving communities, want to focus on the yes. And in jazz, blues, and R&B news, we have this review of a brand new CD by Betty Levette. It's called Blackbirds, and it's given 4 out of a possible 4 stars in the Week magazine, September 18, 2020. Betty Levette is widely and wisely revered as one of our greatest living rhythm and blues singers, said Chris Willman in Variety. Continuing a career resurgence that began 15 years ago when she started putting a blues spin on the rock catalog, the 74-year-old has now turned to reinterpreting the work of such black musical icons as Nina Simone, Dinah Washington, and Billie Holiday. Still a leave-no-prisoner stylist, Levette uses her one-of-a-kind voice to make each song her own, aided by her producer's instinct for the brilliantly sweet spot where a late 50s jazz combo intersects with an early 70s funk soul sound. Levette doesn't just croon songs, says Hal Horowitz in AmericanSongwriter.com. She gets inside them and reveals layers of meaning often even their writers didn't express as effectively. She makes strange fruit newly stunning, and by the time she closes out with a reworking of Blackbird, Paul McCartney's tribute to black female singers, most listeners will be wrung out emotionally. And in music research and technology, we have this article entitled, Voices Can Shape Power Perceptions. This is published in the New York Times on the 21st of November, 2019, by Jessica Bennett. In a course called Sounding American at the University of California, Berkeley, Tom McEnany, a professor of comparative literature and Portuguese and Spanish, teaches that there is in fact a sound that people associate with authority in this country, and while it is constantly evolving, it has its roots in many things, one of which is early broadcast technology. Dating back to the phonograph, he said, engineers had created a device that was designed for the male voice. Newscasters, presidents, public figures, to the extent that if a woman spoke into it, her voice would sound distorted, thin, or scrambled. The mic wouldn't pick up certain ranges of voice, McEnany said. If a woman wanted to speak and get her voice recorded, she had to produce more volume and more energy to make the same marks. She could try to speak lower, or she could shout, but she'd have to change her voice. Over time, that technology improved, but he thinks the deep-rooted association between female voices and sonic distortion leads to the seemingly strong, albeit frequently subconscious, reaction that many people have to the higher pitch. So there was a bias in the engineering. That bias in the engineering produced distortion, which was mistakenly associated with women's voices, and then listeners, even after that correction, used that association as the justification for their ongoing prejudice against women's voices, McEnany said, and those carry up to the present day. In rock and pop music news, we have this article entitled, Eddie Van Halen, Dead at 65. This is published in TMZ.com on the 6th of October, 2020. Eddie Van Halen, the legendary guitarist and co-founder of Van Halen, has died after a long battle with throat cancer, TMZ has learned. Sources directly connected to the rock star tell us he died at St. John's Hospital in Santa Monica Tuesday. His wife, Janie, was by his side along with his son, Wolfgang, and Alex, Eddie's brother and drummer. We're told in the last 72 hours, Eddie's ongoing health battle went massively downhill. Doctors discovered his throat cancer had moved to his brain as well as other organs. Though he was a heavy smoker for years, he believes he developed throat cancer from a metal guitar pick he used to frequently hold in his mouth more than 20 years ago. Nevertheless, he continued to attend concerts and rehearse music with his son, Wolfgang, who, if you don't know, became Van Halen's bassist in 2006. Of course, Eddie himself was considered one of the best and most influential guitarists of all time, who first made a name for himself with his solo on Van Halen's Eruption. Eddie formed the classic rock group in Pasadena in 1972 with his brother Alex on drums, Michael Anthony on bass, and David Lee Roth singing. Eddie served as the main songwriter on their self-titled debut album in 1978, which launched the group into rock superstardom in the 1980s. They went on to pump out hit after hit, including Running with the Devil, Unchained, Hot for Teacher, Panama, and Jump. While the band had already achieved hard rock superstardom, Eddie became a pop culture icon with the 1983 release of Michael Jackson's Beat It, which featured Eddie's iconic guitar solo. Van Halen was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2007, and Eddie is widely considered one of the greatest guitar players of all time. He survived by his wife, Janie, and his son. Eddie was 65. Rest in peace. And in local music news, we have this news from Arts NC State. This is published in Arts NC State at ncsu.edu on the 5th of October, 2020, by Rich Holly. At the midpoint of our most unusual fall semester, I continue to be amazed by the extraordinary think and do spirit of our students, faculty, and staff. The resiliency demonstrated through the creation of online and physically distanced art classes and events has been remarkable. I'm pleased to share a few updates and highlights from our arts program. Not only has our Department of Music been incredibly creative in shifting classes to a meaningful online experience, the NC State Jazz Combo and the Jazz Orchestra are both making recordings from home, available for free on SoundCloud. And our orchestras and choirs are working with the NC State University Libraries to create the Brickyard Broadcast, a new virtual music work that will be presented November 12th and 13th. The challenges musicians are facing during the coronavirus pandemic are largely rooted in the inability to gather. Performance venues are closed, traveling is discouraged, and ensembles are unable to rehearse and perform together. Virtual choirs and orchestras are producing pre-recorded performances, editing together each musician's individual recording into a group work. Musicians are live streaming solo concerts from home. Those who make music are finding a way. While Brickyard Broadcast will be developed expressly for a VR premiere, given the way the semester has taken shape, it has the potential to be mounted in the future as an in-person live performance with groups performing at varying distances from each other on the Brickyard itself. In either case, whether online or in person, every audience member's experience will be completely unique, depending on how they choose to move among the sounds they hear. So, how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in 1962 that the BBC banned which song? Was that A, Big Girls Don't Cry by the Four Seasons? Was it B, Catch a Falling Star by Perry Como? Was it C, Monster Mash by Bobby Boris Pickett? Or was it D, In the Ghetto by Elvis Presley? Correct answer? Answer C, Monster Mash by Bobby Boris Pickett. As noted in an October 29, 2018 article in QZ.com by Dave Gershgom, the BBC banned this song for 11 years for being, quote-unquote, too morbid. The Monster Mash is the song of Halloween. It's spooky, catchy, and much like your costume, it was put together in less than an hour. Despite the ban, the song climbed to top the Billboard charts in 1962 in the U.S., staying on the charts for 14 weeks. But the ban was eventually reversed in 1973, 11 years after the song was released. That year, it went to number 3 on the U.K. charts and number 10 on the Billboard charts again, only fitting for a graveyard smash. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1985 that a 2.5-acre garden memorial was dedicated to John Lennon by his widow, Yoko Ono. The memorial in New York City's Central Park is called what? Is that A, Imagine Peace Park, B, Octopus's Garden, C, Strawberry Fields, or D, Instant Karma? Correct answer? Answer C, Strawberry Fields. As noted in CentralParkNYC.org, this 2.5-acre memorial to John Lennon features an elaborate mosaic bearing the word Imagine, a nod to the songwriter's anthem of peace. The memorial is surrounded by benches and shaded by stately American elms, making it a tranquil spot for reflection. Named after one of Lennon's favorite songs, Strawberry Fields Forever, the memorial sits just across the street from the landmark Dakota apartment building, Lennon's former home and the site of his tragic death in 1980. Like many Upper West Siders, Lennon would often enjoy walks in this very landscape. Strawberry Fields was officially dedicated on October 9, 1985, the 45th anniversary of Lennon's birth. His widow, Yoko Ono Lennon, worked with landscape architect Bruce Kelly and the Conservancy to create a memorial that represents Lennon's legacy as a visionary of world peace. The Imagine mosaic, made by Italian craftsmen and gifted by the city of Naples, serves as a testament to Lennon's global resonance. A designated quiet zone in the park, Strawberry Fields, has also been endorsed as a Garden of Peace by 121 countries whose names appear on a bronze plaque on the path leading to the memorial. So let's close out today's program with the oft-called fifth Beatle, Billy Preston, performing the same song he performed 45 years ago today on the very first broadcast of Saturday Night Live, Nothing from Nothing. Run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.